Hello, mensen. You're listening to Your Mom with Skalk, a podcast hosted by me, Skalk Besuitnout. Now, on this show, we're going to journey deep into the lives of really lucky people. Some of them are my friends. Some of them I wish were my friends. But I don't want to speak to these exceptional people, these celebrities directly. I mean, yeah, look, it means I think we are also tired of listening to celebrities. Everyone and their mother, excuse the pun, has a podcast where they interview celebrities. So we're not going to speak to the celebrities directly, but rather about the celebrities through the people that know them better than anyone, which is, of course, their mothers. Hello, mensen, it's Skalk Besuitnout here, and welcome to Your Mom with Skalk. And I am sitting here, mensen, in the house of Tani Gail. She is, of course, the mother of, when I say her surname, you're definitely going to know this, is it's Tani Gail Goliath, mother of comedian Jason Goliath. We are here in his house. And as you know, Jason is sitting here across from me, mensen. This podcast is for a change, not about you.
For a change.
You are doing PR now anyway for your own show. So this is Tani Gail's time to shine. This is who I want to speak to.
The queen.
The queen of Goliath and Goliath. When I walked in here, Tani, you said you're very busy because you work for Goliath and Goliath.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, look, hey, Jason, so you're like a real entrepreneur. You were in business before.
Yes. I failed terribly.
What? Just remind me, what business was that?
So I owned an insurance brokerage, and we went under in 2010 in spectacular fashion.
Was it your fault?
No. We did business with some bad people. There was a recession in 2008. What was my fault is I should have closed the business in 2008. But then, you know, when you have your first business, you treat it like a child. You try to revive it. You pay salaries with your credit card. And then you make lots of debt that you're still paying off 10, 11, 12 years later. But yes, I started comedy in 2011, and that's when the happiness began. And Tani Gail stood by me through the whole thing.
Because you proper like employed the whole family. I mean, your sister's your agent, your mom, what is her title in Goliath and Goliath?
My sister is the MD of Goliath and Goliath, and my mom is essentially Kate's assistant.
But so your daughter's PA?
Yeah. So, but it's not so much entrepreneurship as much as I'd like to call us an NGO. We help, you know what I mean? We help.
Please don't sell yourself as a non-profit. I know you are making profit. I don't know how much profit.
Not as much as you, Skalk. That's how much.
Oh, my word. Please. So, Tani Gail, tell me like a bit about you. Where did you start? And, you know, what's your story?
Oh, where would you like me to start the thing, Skalk? Okay, so I'm 64 years old. Yeah. And that's why I'm asking, where would you like me to start? And I just realized I mustn't nod my head when I'm speaking to you because we're doing a podcast. Okay, so prior to Goliath, and Jason and Kate will kill me for saying this, but I worked for Mnet for 25 years in public relations.
Okay.
And at the age of 55, I was made redundant from Mnet, and which I was very happy about. And that was a welcomed relief to get out of corporate. And then Jason said to me, Mom, take 3 months off. You've worked hard all your life. And after 3 months, can you come and join Goliath and Goliath? Because we would love to have your expertise. So I've traveled the world. I've worked with the likes of Princess Diana, Nelson Mandela, Ben Kingsley, Joan Collins, Britt Eklund, all the stars, Ursula Andress, etc.
Who was nicer between Diana and Mandela?
Diana.
First time ever that question has been asked. What's nicer between a hamburger and a hot dog? Come on, both those things are delicious.
Diana, yeah, you know, and
Mandela.
Let me ask another question because you are safe now.
Yeah.
Do you think the Queen did it, Diana?
No.
I think she did it.
I think she did. I think she did it.
No. She did it.
No. But the reason I said that between Diana and Nelson Mandela, that Diana was better, because Nelson Mandela's presence, when I first met him,
yes,
made me burst into tears.
Wow.
In my Jenny Button designer outfit at the Sandton Sun Hotel in 1994.
How is Jenny Button relevant to the tears?
Jenny Button is a designer.
It
Jason's
is relevant.
Very green. It's
you
very
need,
relevant.
You need to know what she looked like to
a,
get to.
A Jenny
this
Button.
Is a podcast, Jason. She is escaping a picture for the mensa.
No, but a Jenny Button outfit in 1994 was something that I literally had to lay by. You couldn't afford, you know, a normal,
and then it was
normal working class person couldn't afford a Jenny Button outfit. So. Yeah, so he made me cry, and I'd never forget my outfit was beige. And then I had this makeup running down my outfit because, he hadn't said a word yet. He had just walked into this room. It was filled with 500 guests. I'll never forget in the Marula room at Sandton Sun. And he was the guest of honor. So the spotlight was on him and trailing him as he was being escorted to his table.
Mm.
And firstly, I envisaged him to be a shorter man. And he was actually quite tall, but just that presence, you know, the room was silent and he entered and just strutted his stuff to his table. It was just absolutely amazing.
Wow. And for all these people, you were in public relations.
Yes, yes. I was once named by Doug Gordon, who's an old journalist. He was very relevant at the time. I don't know if Doug is even still alive now, but he did an article with me in the U magazine. And back then I was named the nanny of the stars. And so Jason and Kate, because of the position that I held at Mnet, and back then when we didn't have the technology that we have now, we would go to Sun City, for example, to do a Miss World event. And I would be there for 2 weeks. And then on the weekend, Koos Becker, the founder of Mnet,
yes,
would fly the children in on a private jet, Jason and Kate.
Jason and Kate.
It wasn't a jet. Yes. It had a propeller. Well, we nearly died. Yeah. It was a six-seater.
But he would just say, Yella moet hier die jet. You must hire the jet or something. And then they would go through with their nanny. And Jason, and then we would stay at the palace.
Here jet, Linda.
Is that how you say it? Here.
Higher.
Here jet. Not here di this jet. Isn't that
no,
this jet?
Here, H-U-U-R.
Yeah, if it's one word, but if you say it, it's two.
Here jet. Oh, okay.
Here jet. Now, oh my word, that's embarrassing for Quizback. And now we know he didn't own a jet.
So.
He had to hear the jet every time.
He hired the jet. He didn't own a jet, no. And he drove like
so
a polo car or something. I mean, he didn't have a luxury car even. So that's why he had to hear the jet.
Hear the jet, but then ride the car.
Exactly. So when we were at Sun City.
Yeah.
Jason then, of course, loved all this opulence, and he was all of 10 years old. And then I said to them, look, we're staying at the palace. You are not allowed to touch one cool drink or any drink in this fridge. Because back then, one little can of Coke, like 200 mils, was like 50 rand or something.
Yes,
and
yes.
So I said to him, no, you guys are not allowed to touch anything. And when
I can tell you the tap water at the palace, delicious.
Yeah.
I believe it.
But then he sees the butler wheeling in these long sweeping tablecloths, you know, round tables, wheeling these tables to the rooms with the silver dome and so forth. And he said, Mommy, you have to order me something so that we can also have this table coming into the room.
With the silver lid, dome and
the butler and et cetera. So anyway, the butler then brings this table. So we order. So I said, all right, order the toasted cheese because that was the cheapest thing on the menu. So we ordered the toasted cheese for him. And so the butler brings the table in with this long sweeping tablecloth and the silver dome and the white cloth over his arm, the suit, etc. And then he lifts the dome and presents this to Jason. And Jason looks at him and says, ah, where's the chicken drumstick? Like they have in the movies. And he was so shocked because there was this tiny little toasted cheese sandwich cut in quarters under this big dome.
I don't blame you because that is actually a terrible experience when you go luxury one way and then the other way. So when I was opening for Trevor Noah, we from Joburg to Durban, we went in a jet.
Mm.
And then the plan was to go from Joburg, fly to Durban, and then back the same evening. Like, even if we get home at 2 a.m, that's fine. So we go down on this jet, and it was my first time on a private jet. Mm-hmm. I even embarrassed myself there next to Lanceria, where the ExecuJet place is. I asked them, I took out my laptop, and I said, where do I put my laptop through? Because I'm so used to, like, every time it's like, take out your laptop, take out your laptop. It's
gonna make laptop in your zambak.
It's gonna make the come it's on. Gonna make the plane fall if your laptop doesn't come out before. I said, like, where do I put my laptop? They're like, just put it back, please. You're embarrassing yourself. There's snacks, there's champagne. Yes. We arrive. I was so surprised how quickly we were in the air. Like, when it was like an Uber. Like, when we got in the jet.
It's not commercial, you see.
We got in the jet. It closes the door. The thing was idling. That's and right. there we go. Then, last minute, Trevor got a great opportunity to go do like a thing with, I think, Chelsea Handler in Cape Town, where they were going to go to Cape Town, a charity thing. Then he said, so sorry, guys, but we're flying to Durban. And then after the show, I'm going to go from Durban to Cape Town with the jet. Then we had to sleep over and I had to fly back the next day on a Kalula.
Oh, no.
And then, you know, and the thing is you must always end on the on the jet.
Yes.
You must fly down.
You can't go backwards in life.
Absolutely.
And I just remember standing there. In that queue the next day, now with my laptop in my hand by the scanner, and I'm looking around to these people thinking, if you even knew
how
I got you,
yes.
the life that I've lived, the things I've seen,
you would like have so much respect for me.
Yeah.
But now I'm standing here like all of you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so horrible.
Yeah.
That is flying to Sun City on a jet, but then you get there and you're only allowed to order.
You're going to drive back on the bus.
A toasted sandwich.
Yeah.
But okay, so then now you, and this is the happiest you've been, it seems. I mean, working for Goliath and Goliath, doing the PR.
I was very happy at Mnet. Mnet was great. It gave one great, well, certainly gave me great security. And being, you know, kind of single parent for a better part of my life, that security was very necessary because I wanted my kids to be better than what I was growing up. And it was a great place to work for. Mnet back then was the only company that was hiring non-whites in the position that I was in.
Wow.
And we were not sort of allowed to work in the front line back then.
So you started there in what year?
1986.
Then? 1986. Okay, you were born still
in which year?
Very much in apartheid.
When were you born?
92.
Oh, yeah.
You're such a child.
Yeah.
I know. No, not actually anymore. I turned 30 the other day, Jason.
I turned 42 last week.
Those days are over. Those child days are over. Now I look at, I can't imagine how you must feel at 42, but at shows, talking about things, like I have this joke in my show where I can literally see kids in the audience, like I'm talking like a matric or 21-year-old, they confuse me because I have this joke that's about that the internet used to make a noise. Like that dial-up sound. They're literally looking at me with like these blank stares. I'm like, I am now at an age where I can't do a joke about an experience from growing up without having to explain it for some people in the audience.
Dude, I've been talking about being born. So I'm born in 1980. And I think the best part about 1980 is I was conscious through the analog to digital kind of switch and revolution. So I know Betamax, I know VHS, I know a pen and a TDK cassette. I know all of those things. Then now these lighties will make a TikTok and not even make their bed. I'm like, my mother would give me a hiding. If I let the world know I didn't make my bed at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I would have gotten a hiding. You know what I mean? So you talk about the contrast of growing up.
The unmade, what you see in a TikTok, the unmade bed.
That's what it frustrates me. I'm like, your sock is on the floor. You've got just another take. Do it again. Pick up the sock. Make the bed. Come on. Clean your lens. I'm so old, bruh.
Look, Jason also has a photographic memory. Jason can remember everything from when he was age 3.
Okay.
Right.
That's before I started drinking rum and coke, just as a disclaimer.
I forgot that that's your drink, Jason.
No, but look, Jason didn't really drink when he was at school. Well, not much anyway. But
no, I played around, then at 6, then at 7, then we got caught. And then I stopped. And then I only drank again when I was 22.
Yes.
So even so, why not at 18, 19, 20, 21?
Because my dad's an alcoholic. And then at that age, I was conscious that, hey, what if I like this thing as much as he likes this thing? And then I saw what this thing was doing to his life. And then at 22, I felt like, okay, now I can trust myself. I'm not addicted to other things.
And Kate influenced him. And Kate influenced him to smoke.
It's not a lie.
Yeah, Kate influenced him to smoke as well and to drink.
And you still smoke?
Yes.
And
and he kicks it old school, ladies and gentlemen. You can't see it, but it's a Peter Stuyvesant.
Oh, a rum and coke and a Peter Stuyvesant. Charlize Theron, take notes. I am more South African than anybody. Yeah,
like,
right,
and
now.
It's a menthol. Yo, I smoked a menthol now and then in school, you know, like there in the bathroom. But yo, menthol, I couldn't do a menthol.
No,
now.
Menthol is like having a peppermint in your mouth while you're having the cigarette. Yes. Delicious. It's amazing.
It's cheating.
Yeah. So Jason was very responsible, but at the same time, very mischievous. Jason also did things thinking that he would never get caught.
But I hardly got caught in my defense.
You were very good. I've said in many interviews that Jason kept me close to God, especially in his high school years. Because he would eat the girls' lunch.
Tyke eats all my lunch, and I don't even get one bite.
I would give him lunch, and then he would still eat the girls' lunch at school. And
just a random girl, or
well, whoever had
the ones who had nice lunch.
Here we go. I was just about to say.
No, that's quite a unique bullying angle.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like a lummy, it's like, I'm going to eat your lunch.
It was a compliment. If I chose your lunch, that means your mother understood groceries. Your mother understood the pots. I didn't just eat anybody. I was quite a sturfy. I think the ones whose lunch I didn't eat may have felt bullied because I'd be like, oh no, please take this peanut butter away.
I'm imagining it like, you know, that Netflix documentary, Wild Wild Country, with like that shaman guy with a beard. Like that cult. Jason walks out of the classroom.
They present it to me.
There's a line of girls and they all got these like cuppies on. They're looking down. Jason walks by. They're standing holding the lunchbox open and they're whispering to each other, will he choose me today? I hope he chooses me. I hope Jason chooses me today.
And some of them are laughing at the others. Oh, you know, he doesn't eat mayonnaise. He's Dorman.
And then he goes, no, not mayonnaise. And she's like, I'm sorry, Jason, I didn't know. I forgot.
I'll tell my mother tomorrow not to put mayonnaise on the bread.
That is hilarious.
So I had to get in touch with the consultant that was referred to me for tax. And I ring up this young lady, and I'd never met her, obviously. And then we chat, and then chatting. And then she says, no, but I know you want to go. I was at school with Jason. Jason used to eat my lunch. I said, oh, God, my child. And I mean, I've had many of those where, you know, people meet me. And then I used to say, but I you do know that I used to make him lunch.
Yeah, but we have two breaks. And then used to get one scuffed in. So I used to club my scuffed in first break. And then second break, I wine and dine in the streets. You know what I mean?
Well, I, in Jason's defense, I just want to say that there could be worse things that, like, girls coming up saying, like, yeah, I've got a...
Yes, I'm going to tell you about your son.
3-year-old at home and Jason disappeared. At least he only, like, ate a sandwich.
I got a fat 3-year-old that we need to talk about.
So tell me, you know, obviously comedians get asked often, like, when did you start or when did you know you were funny or whatever? But I always like hearing it from the mom's perspective. So was Jason particularly funny at home, at school? Was there ever a moment that you thought, wow, like when he went into business, like maybe this is the wrong thing, or did it just all sort of come together when he started stand-up? Early 2011.
Jason was always funny. And as I said earlier, in his own way, he was very innovative in his own way, very experimental in his own way. So one evening, his dad and I were lying in bed reading, quiet. The kids are supposed to be asleep. We've done the bedtime stories. He was in Senate 5.
And the bedtime stories for my sister, who was in standard two, I in standard five did not need a bedtime story. Thank you.
But he would sit there and tease his sister.
You were busy doing donuts in the yes, parking lot.
No, so he's in bed and we think
or stealing donuts.
We think he's sleeping, and we hear this loud crash, and we rush to his bedroom, and he had a reading lamp which was over his bed. And he was taking saliva and putting it on the bulb. And this bulb smashed into a million pieces. I'm not
for
exaggerating.
What was the game?
An experiment.
I don't get what the game was.
So the game was, let's see what would happen. That was always the game. Just like that's why eventually matches were hidden in the house because I liked
matches are still hidden up until today.
To see what would happen. And the hot light bulb with a bunch of saliva used to, you know, bubble and boil. And then that I put a little bit too much and I just heard it go, tswee. And it's like I knew. I just put my head under the blankets. And it exploded. Unbelievable.
You're lucky you're not like blinded or something, eh?
No, for
I
real.
Mean, like that,
for real.
That
for real.
Glass.
But as my mom said, I was always smart. So I anticipated the explosion.
He was ready with the duvet, he says.
Yeah.
You know, to put his head underneath.
Protect a shield.
And so, of course, needless to say, there we were now cleaning up this glass. And Jason was like, oh, I didn't expect it to explode. You know, very calm, very gentle,
So tell me then when the stand-up comedy happened,
then
what was your first thought? I mean, it's like failed business. What did you say? Insurance?
Yeah. I was 30 when I started comedy.
So I've always supported the children, Kate and Jason, with regards to their careers. They had career guidance. When you leave school 17, 18, you're a very different person to when you're 20, to when you're 22, to when you're 26. So study something that you can embark on and grow on as you grow. And so I advised both of them to study marketing international degrees. Kate, however, did journalism, wanted to do journalism. And I said to her, don't do journalism. You know, don't focus on that because...
My mom said, don't do journalism because journalists are broke.
Yeah, and I said, journalists drive funny cars.
That's right. I don't actually know like a stinking rich journalist
that I think of it. They drive bad cars, all his VWs, and they eat bad food and they dress poorly. So I said,
journalists.
You know, so I said to her, I said, I can't wait
for the journalist to hear that.
No, but I had been exposed from my time at MNET to journalists.
New journalists.
And they would come to events and hoover the food and the alcohol, you know, because I mean, then everything is free.
And you're like, sorry, that's actually for Mandela.
You know, yes.
They're like, rah, 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 rah.
No, that's actually Princess Di's samosa. You can put that down.
Minsa, I just had to pull someone here quickly. It's a different day. We're in a studio. One of our producers, Rasmus. Rasmus, where are you actually from? Because you have an accent.
Yeah.
We all have an accent, but you have a strong accent. I also have a strong accent, but you know what I mean? A foreign strong accent.
I wasn't going to mention anything, Skog, but you also have an accent. I'm from Denmark.
Okay. So you are a journalist.
Yeah.
And let's start with the insults.
They drive bad cars, all his VWs, and they eat bad food and they dress poorly. And they would come to events and hoover the food.
So it means I can already attest for the fashion. It's not bad. Rasmus, he's wearing like a nice shirt. Salmon. Is that salmon?
Yeah. I mean, I think it might have been red once, but I think it's faded to salmon now.
Well, that's very Denmark. And then jean shorts and, okay, fine, Velcro sandals, but means I think that's a culture thing. He doesn't have the socks with it as well, at least. So please give me your lowdown of Jason's mom's valuation of journalists. Fashion? Agree? Disagree?
No, I agree. I think I'm on the spectrum a little bit on the better dressed side, and I still have holes in my pants. So so definitely poorly dressed. I would say in general that's true.
Okay, and then the food?
also true. If you get a chance, I mean, the thing about journalists that she's also right about is that we don't get paid that much, right? So, you know, we're trying to make up for it wherever we can. And yeah, a buffet is one of those places where you can save a dinner. And if you do that enough, you know?
Yeah. So, and then the VW, what do you drive?
No, I drive a Volvo.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing about it, you know, journalists aren't the same everywhere. And I guess before we are journalists or comedian, we also like have another identity. And I'm Danish. And
yeah,
thing about Danish people is we don't like the Swedes.
Yes.
They are, you know, our older brother. We don't like them.
Why don't you like the Swedes?
Well, because they are almost like us, but a little bit bigger.
A bit better or not? But you like their cars?
Their cars. You've got to hand it to them with the cars.
So there you have it, Mensa. Journalist may hoover all the snacks at your party and may be, look, probably will be poorly dressed, but they won't necessarily arrive in a VW.
Anyway, so of course Jason had, you know, all the other jobs prior to starting comedy, and like he said in the beginning of the conversation, that his businesses had failed, and then of course he's told the story many a time where Siv Ngesi spotted him on set and said, "Look, why don't you try comedy? I think you're amazing."
I don't know the story. What is the?
So yeah, so I mean the story is I got the big Casa Lager campaign. So that was like the first big campaign after everything went south, and it was the first.
Olive Branch.
So
if you weren't a comedian, how did they find you?
So I always liked entertainment, but yes. I learned from my observations of my mom in PR that being rich and famous in South Africa is a very rare thing. You can be rich or famous, like decide.
And
you
it's short people, lived. No, the pie is very small.
Designer outfits, yeah, living in a leaky VW Beetle. You know what I mean? It was rough.
Okay.
So then I spent my 20s chasing bucks. Then my business goes under and I'm like, okay, look, I still got this need to explore entertainment. So I'd always sung in the choir, did the school plays, yes, and through my 20s, my microphone kind of need was fed by Macro. I was an in-store announcer. So now my business goes under. I've got a choice to go back in.
I knew that Nick, your cousin, for those who don't know, is also part of Goliath and Goliath. I knew he did it, but I didn't know that you also.
I was the greatest ever, bro. I did it for 13 years.
I
started as a student.
Jason did it
and
for 13
did it every
years.
Single
yeah.
weekend, literally yeah. for 13 years. Like literally.
And what are the hours of a Macro in-store announcer?
So I was a specialist. Okay. I wasn't
what
the guy
did you
that
specialize
said,
in?
So I was trained in a patented selling technique that allowed us to sell high volume product at a high value product in high volumes, where traditionally the retail model would be high volumes would be reserved for low. And bruh, I earned so much money at Macro because I would turn over 2 million rand a weekend. So I was in there for 8 hours a weekend. And my targets were ridiculous. So I was the guy that would sell 1,000 air fryers on a Saturday.
Why did you leave? Well, why did you go to comedy?
So I left because it was not glamorous. There was nothing so easy about working in a Macro.
And no one's spotting you at the airport going, "Aren't you the Macro?"
You'd be surprised, bro. Yeah, no, you sold me a TV that only worked for 6 days. I'd get that at the airport.
Yeah, that's only not, angry no customers, stop, though.
No
yeah.
stopping you for a selfie.
For a selfie.
But then I thought, okay, look, let me do something. Let me try this entertainment thing. I don't have
Before
kids.
You carry on, sorry, I have to stop you. Can you just give me a taste? I don't want to put you on the spot. You don't have to, but...
Okay. Of Macro.
Macro. Can I give you the product?
Any product. Anything you can think of.
Okay. Kitchen or anything.
Anything. Doesn't
okay.
Matter.
A Smeg toaster.
A Smeg toaster. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Macro Crown Minds. Coming up in the next 5 minutes, I've got a deal that is going to blow your mind. I know your toaster frustrates you. It trips the lights. It never gets to the browning level that you enjoy. You want TV toast. What do you have? Burnt toast. But I also know you're tired of no-name brand appliances. You've seen appliances that would make your mother-in-law proud, and you think you can't afford them. Today, I'm giving you the best brand in the world, Smeg. The brand you you see on TV, the brand you see in the homes of the rich and famous. Today, we turn your home into that home. We're not doing a two-slice toaster. We're doing a four-slice toaster because who makes only two slices? I'll tell you, lonely, broke people. I know you think you can't afford a Smeg toaster, but I'm about to blow your mind. The con. I only have 10, and in the next 5 minutes, 10 lucky customers will have their lives changed with not a phenomenal toaster, a Smeg toaster, something that you'd post on Facebook. The recommended retail selling price is 2,999 Rand. If you bought it at another macro store, you could expect to spend 2,000 Rand, but you came to me, the deal man, and I'm about to do the deal of your dreams. 10 customers only. Four-slice Smeg toaster. Change your kitchen. Change your look. Your success starts today. Instead of spending 3,000 Rand, it's yours. First come, first serve, 999 Rand. Go. And I would sell 10 toasters just like that. Admit it, that is amazing. Come on.
The type of toaster that you put on Facebook.
Come on.
Dude, if I wasn't holding a mic.
Thank you.
I'm clapping on my leg.
I'll take a thigh clap. I will take a thigh clap for that.
Dude, that was amazing. And you know what? I wanted to say to you now when I was hearing that, that explains so much about your comedy because your crowd work has always been great. Because at gigs, often you would host
yes.
and your crowd work is amazing and you can, you're one of the guys in South Africa that is the best at it, and now it makes sense because you had to think on your feet so quickly, and now
I had to think on my feet, but I also had to deal with different types of human beings every single day. So the gift of macro.
So you also went onto the floor then to sell it.
No, I was on the floor on a cordless mic.
On the floor. You weren't
on a cordless mic. I wasn't. Oh, you thought I sat in the office with
yes,
that?
Yes, I thought you were in
microphone.
That like beep.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
No, this is rock and roll, bro. This is serious stuff. I had to wear a suit. I went on training and then I did training for it. I did facilitation. I trained hundreds of salespeople in my days. I did lots of sales training in my 20s. But I'm always like, you know, a believer that everything is helping me. And all my years at Macro prepared me to be able to entertain any human. You work in a mine, I can entertain you. You are a lawyer and you work on the top floor in a building in Sandton, I can entertain you because you get to meet every different type of human being. So you also get to figure out that everybody's exactly the same when it comes down to it, but people just like a little bit of different etiquette now and then. You know what I mean? Tact has got to change a little bit.
He's also, it also taught him how to put out fights and stop fighting.
100%. And create fights.
Because when he was doing these announcements,
but then 20
for these
people
specials,
come for the 10 toasters.
So I get 30 people for 10 toasters, and then they want to hit each other for a toaster.
Well, women would pull each other's hair out.
Many times, bro. Many times.
It was crazy. He would sometimes come home and his buttons are off his shirt, and I'll say, what happened? And then he would say, no, I had to stop a fight, Mom. These two guys were going for each other.
And this is his wife sent him to buy rice.
Yes.
Now I've convinced him to buy a TV. Now he's mooring somebody else for a TV. Now you must explain to his wife, I got Kamur trying to buy a Telefunken. You know what I mean? And she's no, but I sent you for testing.
And not only did he get mooed for it, but he actually got the Telefunken and he
100%.
Spent the 10,000 Rand that they were supposed to use on their holiday.
And forgot the rice. That was the best part.
And forgot the rice.
Forgot the rice.
This is the best story that someone has told on the podcast so far.
That's what amazing. Happened. And because Jason being Jason,
yes.
for 13 years, we had to change because then Sunday lunch, 1 o'clock, it was church in the morning.
Yeah.
And then lunch at 1 o'clock, right? Table set in the main dining room at home, etc. when we were still in the family home, right? And when Jason started at Macro, he said, Mom, we can't.
That's rush hour.
We can't. No, but we can't have Sunday.
Lunch at three.
He finished at 2. So we had to have lunch at 3 because the store closed at 4, right?
Sundays the store used to close at 2.
The store closed at 2, that's right.
Yeah, 4 on a Saturday.
So he would phone and say, I'm leaving Macro now. And by 2 o'clock, the table is set. And
I'm leaving Macro now?
Yes. Yep. The table is set. And at 2:15, that electric gate would open. And then the casserole dishes must come out onto the table. Jason goes through to the bathroom, washes his hands, and comes and sits upright at the table.
Like
he changed that. My life changed for 13 years.
That's where that Sun City opulence now played a role. You see, he came in like he's in the palace. Those casseroles must come out.
There was no meal that was not at the table.
You think that's the opulence? The opulence is because I worked every weekend in my 20s. And, you know, my mom and I have an unbelievable relationship. And it's a relationship of that kind of, I think it can be summed up by saying, I always said to her, don't ask me questions that you don't want the answer to, because I'll be honest with you about every single thing I'm doing, when I'm doing it, who I'm doing it with, where I am. So be careful what you ask me, and then that will enable me to tell you everything.
Okay.
Then it got to a point where I now still wanted to groove. I still wanted to party with the Owens. So I'd be out every Friday night, every Saturday night, I'd be out. I'd get home at 6 a.m.
Yes.
Still drunk sometimes.
Yeah.
Then have a small sleep. I have to be at work at 10, 9 o'clock. Instead of fluking me, my mom comes in with a breakfast of a fry up of champions.
It's a hangover breakfast.
Just to come in with the cure, the coffee, help me get out the house. So instead of fighting with me, the only time she'd fight with me is if I didn't go to work. Yes. And that's why I never ever missed work. So it would be fine. Come home whatever time you want, as long as you're doing what you've got to do.
Yeah.
Then she'd have my back. No long faces, no fighting. Yeah. So then I'd have the big breakfast in the morning like a champion. Get
his
to macro late,
his
quarter
shirt
past
is
10.
Ready, his tie, etc.
Yeah.
And
infrastructure support systems, my friend.
I also had to take care of his shoes because he did so much walking and spinning while he was at macro on his feet.
But
spinning on his feet, that the soles of his shoes would wear out so often that I would then have to have them repaired.
But this relationship has always been two-way. So as much as my mom was ever willing to do for me, she always had the assurance that I would do the same and more for her. And
that's what I said earlier. You know, the respect, it was just so, so, so amazing. When Jason was a youth leader, and if they partied and maybe they had to do something, and Kate was a Sunday school teacher, Sunday mornings I used to say to them, guys, just eat something before we go to church because you all are reeking of alcohol, man.
You can't go and indulge in the Holy Spirit while smelling of the other spirit.
The other spirit. You know what I mean?
The spirit.
So, I mean, I don't have anything sort of dirty laundry, you know, to say about Jason, because when there was
Well, you wouldn't because you're in PR.
No, apart from which, when there was dirty laundry, he owned his dirty laundry.
Yeah.
You know, he took responsibility for it. And he'd manage it.
Elton Yankees.
No, opposite. Literally the opposite.
He has now
but,
after a long
the
time.
Most the most respectful person, I mean, when it comes to women, Jason treats every woman with the greatest respect.
Mm.
You know, whether you're a mama that has just done a big shop at Checkers, he would stop and go and help you carrying your parcels, you know, etc. I mean, I don't have anything that I can fault Jason on, sadly. And as he said, you know, we just had such a fantastic relationship. And he was always so mindful about my well-being. And now he is so grateful to me for having his back, for lack of a better word, that today, at 64 years old, I lack for nothing.
I just have to say, the thing for me that I love about this podcast is this is now maybe episode 7 or 8. And every single mom has been so different, but exactly the same in the sense that they've all been such mothers. You know, they are there, in every single instance, they are their son or their daughter's biggest fan. I can tell you are Jason's biggest fan. And they were just like, move mountain. It's so sweet. And I've been actually trying to go out of my way. I realized early in the interview, I'm not going to get it right this time again, but I've been trying to go out of my way to try and get the mom just to say like one bad thing. Just
He's
something.
Actually an asshole.
I can tell you a bad thing.
Just something like, I didn't like that show you did. I thought it was cock. Out of everything Jason has done, shows and TV campaigns and roles that he's played, I know that you love all of it. Is there one, just one that you go, no, I didn't like that?
Skulk, you know, it's so difficult. You've got me off guard now. There isn't really. Have I ever phoned you to say that there was anything that I...
Not even once.
Not one joke where you brought one of your friends from church and you go, did you have to do the joke about
If those friends didn't like the joke, they would not be friends anymore. That's how much my mom loves me, bruh. It's as simple as that.
The gynecologist joke, Jason, that you have to do that, tonight.
That joke is hilarious. So even friends that were prude, even prudes laugh at that joke.
Yes, they do.
No, Skulk, to answer your question, there isn't, eh? I can't.
That's what I thought. No, that's what I thought. I was taking a chance.
So there wasn't a joke, but I once got into trouble because it was they had a surprise birthday party for me and I got up a little bit drunk in Greenside there and the whole family was there and friends. And then one of my mates left and he was parked right in front of the restaurant. So I went to fetch my car to come into that parking. And then I decided to have a little bit of a donut there, you know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yes.
Then all of the smoke from the tires blew into the restaurant. Yeah. And my mom was mortified. Mortified.
I left my guests at the table and I went, I just had to go and meet with him outside.
I had lectures. I was called to a meeting the next day. Skulk, I was called to a meeting the next day and I remember her going on about how dangerous, how embarrassing. And then I said to her,
and it's common, man. It's common.
No, very common.
Yeah.
And Gail doesn't like common.
So then
I said to her.
I wish the listeners could see the way Tiny Gail is sitting on this couch. It's Diana herself over here.
Exactly. The reincarnation. A regal somebody. And I remember saying to her after she scolded me, listen, I appreciate that you're a bit upset. But it was a fucking wheel spin. All of my cousins had children out of wedlock. All of them were either drugs and uselesses. I'm like, the only thing you have in my whole life to be upset with me about is this wheel spin. Yeah. Relax. And literally after that, she thought about it for a second and went, yeah, listen, it was a bit embarrassing. I'm sorry for overreacting. I know it was your birthday.
Yeah,
but in your defense,
in your defense, girl, a child out of wedlock doesn't cause a bunch of smoke to blow into the restaurant.
No.
So I'm with you on that one.
No.
Also says Kalk was never made a wheel spin in his life.
Only by accident. and then just release the clutch a bit fast and then I drive away going, oh, that was quite cool. I'll try and do it on purpose next time. And now you go, obviously Jason's doing a new show. Jason, I'm so sorry, this podcast only comes out when your Joburg run is finished.
I know, but it will promote the Cape Town run, which will start end of February 2023.
Perfect. End of February 2023, there you have it. Dala What You Must is the show. It's what it's called, but also Dala What You Must.
But to answer your question about going to shows.
Yes.
I'm Jason's biggest supporter. I don't go to every show. I do, like now, for example, I went to the opening of Dala What You Must, which was absolutely amazing. And I'm going again tonight.
Do you give notes?
Give notes.
Yeah. Do you tell him like,
you mean after the show, crit?
Yes.
Crit the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's nothing much to
good
crit.
Or bad. No, yes. Doesn't crit the content, doesn't crit the way I do it. Mm. I liked it or I didn't like it, and I've never got it, I didn't like it.
I think having the background, you know, of being in entertainment all those years working for Mnet has certainly broadened my mind to this form of entertainment. And again, you know, a lot of my friends my age and up, etc., wouldn't embrace something like that for their children because, I mean, do you want to be a comedian? Hello? You know?
Yeah, and especially the swearing, not that Jason really swears that much, but that is a bit of a, it was a tough pill to swallow for my mom. And I think once she started coming to more shows and saw people enjoying it, that was the thing that went, wow, people are really enjoying this thing he does. And then that makes her proud because it was like, wow, he's bringing joy, he's bringing laughter and whatever.
Skulk, for me, on the swearing, if Jason spoke like that in general, I would have a problem with it. What we have to understand with comedy is, and I think Mel Miller put it very nicely many, many years ago, he said, look, it's a comedy show, it's an open audience, it's an adult audience, there will be swearing. And just understand that. Take it from whence it comes. But if you really don't like it, then leave. Because this is a stage performance. you see.
Yeah.
So when he's on stage and he throws, you know, the odd F-bomb, etc., it's acceptable to me because he doesn't speak to his wife like that. He doesn't speak to me like that. He doesn't speak to anybody like that. Once he's out and off that stage, then it's a, you know, it's a completely different, it's almost like being in a different space. So when he's on that stage space, his language is different to when he's in a normal space.
But the nice thing is it's still him in the sense that you're not watching a character. It is Jason.
100%.
Yes.
And the swearing is I always hope, and even every time I'm nervous, I notice it pop up. I swear a little bit more. And you know, swearing can be a crutch.
The same.
A crutch as a comedian. But generally, I'm like, swear words for me are the aromat of language. Yes. You know what I mean? A swearing.
It's a form of expression.
100%.
And also, for me, makes the spice nice. What's important, and having watched comedy for many, many years, even before Jason, you know, from Jeremy Mansfield days, bless his soul. But for me, if the swearing is in context, then it's acceptable. But when guys are on stage and they're just having a fuck and a fuck and a fuck and, you know, etc., then for me, that when there's no context, then no, I'm sorry.
I do want to say I love swearing, though. And I don't think I'll ever stop swearing. I'm trying to swear less on stage, not because I don't want swearing in my comedy, but because I want to be able to use my comedy on social media. Yeah. And so a lot of the stuff I can't post because the language is you know, too strong to be kind of postable because there's kids on social media. Mm. So even then, like I'm an advocate for swearing. I'm an advocate for expression. I don't believe in swearing at anybody, and I don't believe in being rude or degrading anybody's position. But I just think that swearing makes language so colorful because I love language. I love talking. I love being able to describe something. And I think sometimes a swear word is more apt than any other word because it not only conveys a meaning, but it also conveys emotion very often. Mm. So I love swearing. Fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah, no, you're right. Mm. So, Dala, what you must, you say it's a good show. People should go.
Absolutely excellent. It's a form of motivational comedy, and the striking part for me, look, I did take away a number of nuggets from the show, even although I've been watching Jason's comedy for years and years. But for me, the show, I'd never ever in my life been to a show where the comedian took me from a laugh, a hearty belly laugh, to complete silence.
And then in almost seconds, tears, I'm sure. Something.
In seconds. And then after that silence, the tears. The tears were just like here.
That's the best comedy.
Right? And then after that tear, before the tear could jump out, then back to laughter.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it was so exhilarating. It was so motivating. It was, it's just not to be missed.
I've got goosebumps.
Can you cut that as the promo for me, please?
Yeah.
Can you give me that before, like now when you go home now, can you just send me that little bit so I can use that as a promo? Thank you, Scott.
Because the thing is, actually, that's something that John Flismas once told me just before I started doing one-man shows. And he said, you can't put a one-man show together and just put all your closing jokes, the ones that hit the hardest, boom, 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 like just, it can't be like a compilation. Because he said, audience cannot physically laugh at full capacity. It is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You have to take them up and take them down. You have to take them on a journey, like any story or movie or whatever. Even if there's no theme to the show, even if the show's not like, this show is about one day I went here and then a girl came along. Even if it's just about random topics, there still needs to be some sort of a journey up and down, up and down. Okay, so by the time you are hearing this, it will be 2023 already. And then if you are in Cape Town, definitely end of February, where is the show?
It's at the old, was it the Few Guard that's renamed now? What's it called? That theater.
Yeah, the Homecoming Theater, isn't it?
Yes, I think so.
It's there in the center of town. It could not be more central. Go to Dia Stav and before the show as at Fora Trinchado, Best Trinchado in Cape Town. And then you just walk across the road to the theatre.
Lekker.
Thank you so much, Tony Gale. We're already speaking too much about Jason now again. But thank you so much. And this was so lekker.
It's an absolute pleasure, Skulk. Thank you.
Skulk, my mother's a fan of yours. She likes three comedians only.
I'm so glad you bring this up. Yes. Who is your favorite comedian?
Don't mention who it used to be. Just mention who it is now. There's no need to, because you've already insulted journalists.
Apart from Jason.
My mom doesn't even say apart from Skulk. She just says, my favorite comedian is.
Jason, Kiribone.
Kiribone, that's your guy.
Oh.
But I love it, and I think it should be like this. It's like, I don't want...
If Kiribone is performing, sorry, Skulk, I'm there.
I don't want, like, my fiance Mika, who by the time this comes out will be my wife.
Hey.
I don't want her to be my biggest fan. It's like, it's a bit like weird for me, you know, like she needs to like my comedy, obviously, but I think it's so sweet when a mom has another favorite comedian, because it's so predictable that your son would be your favorite comedian. My mom's favorite is the way yours, Kiribone, my mom, Mpo Pops, and Dylan Oliphant.
And then after Kiribone, is Indumisi Lindi.
Yes.
Oh.
Love him. Yeah. No, you like my mom as well. She will, if I'm on a lineup show, like a Kings and Queens of Comedy, one of those big lineup shows, she'll look who's on the lineup and then she comes.
Yeah.
And then I think she's coming to support me, but meanwhile, she's coming to watch Pops and Dylan. Yeah.
But let's be honest, Pops and Dylan are all of our favorites. I'm just proud of my mom for saying Kiribone, because that's how you know she's watched a lot of comedy, because Kiribone is like comedy's best kept secret in the country. Not everybody knows Kiribone.
Yes.
But that just means she knows comedy.
But going back to Jason, the one thing that I'm still in awe of, and I think it will stay with him, as you know, when he's as old as Barry Hilton and maybe older, is his stage presence.
Yeah.
I get goosebumps every time.
Mm.
Every time Jason walks on that stage or runs onto the stage or dances onto the stage, I get goosebumps, because he just has such an aura. You know, Jason is nice. When I speak to Jason over the phone, and I'm going to get emotional, or when Jason comes to my home, when he leaves, there's a niceness. You know, I know my home has a good aura, but when Jason has been, there's a niceness. Jason can fix everything. If you come to Jason with a problem, even if it's just with words and kindness, that's Jason. When I put the phone down after a conversation with Jason, I give thanks. Because he brings joy, he brings happiness. And he just wants happiness for everybody, regardless of what color, creed, or race you are. And it's a genuineness. It's a genuineness.
I got it from my mama.
I need to end the podcast on that note. Jason, that's the best PR you've ever received. Thank you, Tony Gale.
Thank you.
There you have it. Sometimes we get emotional on this show. Sometimes, you know, mothers can do that to us, you know. But Mensa, that's it for today. And I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Tony Gale and Jason. And I'll catch you next week for another chat with another Tony. Your Mom with Skulk is a Telltale Media production and hosted by me, Skulk Besidenote. Now, Mensa, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Please subscribe to the show and leave us a review. This helps us with our ratings, which in turn helps us attract sponsors, which in turn helps us bring you the show for free. In the words of Jerry Maguire, help me help you. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, hit the follow button, give us some stars. Oh, Mensa, we love stars. I can't even tell you how much we love stars. 5 of them in a row, preferably. Lastly, leave us a review or send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Check us out at telltale.media/skulk. Tata for now. I like the first one more where I messed it up. In the words of Jerry Maguire, help me, help me, help you. Fuck, I fucked that up.